reverberating all around me. Dad's brows twitch, like he's puzzling out my grin. "Autumn?" he asks, but sounds unsure. He knows I don't look like this when I've been hanging out with Autumn. Or anyone. "Sebastian." His mouth makes the "ah" shape, and he nods again, and again his eyes move across my face. "You're being safe?" "Oh, my God." The smile wobbles under the weight of my mortification. "Dad, it's a legitimate question." "We're not..." I turn to the fridge, opening it to grab a Coke. Warring images flash through my thoughts. Sebastian on top of me, over me. Dad sitting here, eyes tight and invested. "You know Mom would murder you for that, for your semi-unintentional blessing that I deflower the bishop's son?" "Tanner." I can't tell if he wants to laugh or smack me. To be honest, I don't think he knows either. "I'm kidding. We're not there yet." Dad puts his mug down, and the ceramic scrapes across the countertop. "Tan, eventually you might be. I just want to know you're being careful." The top of my soda cracks open with a satisfying hiss. "I promise I won't get him pregnant." His eyes roll skyward, and Mom chooses this exact moment to walk in, stopping short just inside the doorway. "What?" Her voice is flat, eyes wide. I take a moment to appreciate that she's wearing a nightgown that says, "Life goes by too quickly," with rainbow-colored words highlighting the LGBTQ acronym. Dad laughs. "No, Jenna, he was out with Sebastian, but it's not what you think." She looks between us, brows furrowed. "And what do I think?" "That he and Sebastian are serious." I blink over to Dad. "Hey, we are serious." "Serious as in love?" Mom asks. "Or serious as in sex?" I groan. "Which would be a bigger problem?" "Neither would be a problem, Tan," Dad says carefully, eyes on Mom. Based on this silent exchange, I'm convinced my parents spend more time talking about me dating the bishop's son than they do talking about everything else combined right now. "You're lucky, you know," I tell them, walking over to envelop my mom in an enormous hug. She melts into me, wrapping her arms around my waist. "How's that?" she asks. "I've never freaked you guys out before." Dad laughs. "You've given us a few heart attacks, Tanner. Don't kid yourself. But this one seems to really have thrown you." His expression sobers. "I think this has been harder for your mom than she's let on." Mom makes a noise of agreement into my chest. "It brought up a lot of feelings, a lot of anger, probably some sadness, too. She wants to protect you from all that." My ribs seem to grow too tight around my lungs, and I squeeze her tighter. "I know." Her words come out muffled. "We love you so much, kiddo. We want you in a more progressive place. As in, as soon as I get my college acceptance letters, I should run and never, ever look back," I say with a grin. Mom nods against me. "I'm praying for UCLA. Dad laughs. "Just be safe, okay? Be careful." I know he isn't just talking about the physical stuff. I walk over to him next, wrapping an arm around his shoulder. "Will you quit worrying about me? I'm fine. I really like Sebastian, but I'm not unaware of the complications." Mom shuffles over to the fridge to get a snack. "So, putting aside his parents and their feelings, you know he could be kicked out of school for just being with you tonight? The church might be more accepting than when I was growing up, but you're aware the BYU honor code doesn't allow him to do whatever it is that you did tonight?" "Mom, when does it get to just be this exciting thing I have? I swear, the last thing I want to do right now is analyze every little bit of how this could go wrong. I do enough of that all day long anyway. The problem isn't with Sebastian and me, it's with the rules." She looks over her shoulder at me, frowning. Dad jumps in. "I get what you're saying, but it isn't that simple. You don't get to just say, because the rules are wrong, that you can do whatever you want." My high over Sebastian's touch, over what we did, starts to fade, and I want to get out of the room as fast as I can. It sucks feeling this way with my parents. I like that I tell them everything. I like that they know me so well, but every time we talk about this, their concerns become this dark shadow that slides in front of the light. It eclipses everything. So we don't reply. The more I argue, the more they'll calmly reason. Dad sighs before giving me a small smile and lifting his chin like, go. Like he can see I need to escape and pour this night out somewhere. I kiss Mom and then run upstairs to my room. The words are bursting out of my head, my hands. Everything that happened, everything I feel pours out of me, liquid relief. When the words are gone, but the feeling still fills my chest of seeing Sebastian collapse back on the hood of my car, wearing that lazy revelation of a grin, I pick up my post-it pad and climb into bed. We spent the afternoon building for service, he said. New pieces, new places, new parts to be put there and taken for granted. But it felt good, and I told him that. He rested a plank on his shoulder, like a bayonet, and I nearly laughed, thinking, is this what it feels like to fall in love with the soldier on the other side? I closed my eyes. I should probably have predicted this. After Saturday night, I should have known that things would be awkward in class on Monday, because in between those 2 days was a whole lot of time back at church. Sebastian doesn't look up from what he's reading when I walk into the seminar on Monday afternoon, but I know he senses me the way I sense him, because his shoulders pull back a little, his eyes narrow, and he swallows thickly. Even Audie notices. At my side, she shuffles her books onto the table and tilts her head to mine. What's that about? She asks under her breath. Are you guys okay? What? I look at him like I don't know what she means and shrug it off. I'm sure he's fine. But inside I'm tripping over my own heartbeat. He didn't text me yesterday. Won't look at me now. Something feels off, and the flippant way I brushed aside my parents' concern feels like it's about to bite me in the ass. Asher rips into the classroom with the shrieking McKenna on his back, and the entire room goes still as he lets her down in the lewdest way possible. She slides down his back, all giggly, and his hands are basically glued to her ass. Their entrance is so preposterous, so attention-hoary, even Burrito Dave lets out a bewildered, dude, seriously? They kiss in front of the entire class, announcing their reunion. Okay, then, I say. Anger spikes in my chest. McCasher can PDA it all over campus, and outside of a little eye-rolling, no one cares. They're both Mormon, by the way, and if I'm not mistaken, shouldn't be engaging in this kind of behavior anywhere, let alone in the middle of school, but will they be ridiculed or shunned or threatened? No. No one is going to report them to their bishop. They can't get kicked out of school. And yet they're chaos fodder, getting back together because they're probably so bored with the lack of gossip, they're subconsciously making something for people to talk about. I'm willing to bet that McCasher has had sex in every conceivable manner, and yet Asher will still go on his mission and come home and marry a good Mormon girl, maybe even McKenna, and still be as self-righteous about LDS values as any of the rest of them. Meanwhile, Sebastian can't even look at me in class, probably because he's beating himself up over our comparably innocent touches on Saturday. My stomach turns sour and then starts to boil. I think the impending prom made them feel amorous, Autumn says beside me. Or desperate. I pull my laptop from my backpack and glance back up at Sebastian. He still hasn't turned around to even look at me. I wish I could throw something at the back of his head or shout an unashamed, hello, remember me? In front of everyone. Instead, I just pull out my phone and beneath the table send him a quick, hey, I'm over here, text. I watch as he reaches for his pocket, pulls out his phone, reads, and then he turns, offers me a wan little smile over his shoulder without actually making eye contact, his eyes swim somewhere above my head, and turns back. My brain is a blender. Mom's voice pushes to the surface again, calming, reminding me that Sebastian is leaving soon and has pressures I'll never understand. What if this was the first time he prayed and felt worse after? The class ticks by in enormous, redwood-sized chunks while I continue to spiral. Almost everyone is done drafting, and Fujita is giving us tips on revisions. At least I think he is. I'm glad Autumn is taking meticulous notes because I'm not catching a word of it. Instead, I bend, crouching over my post-it, writing. The moon was gone, leaving only the yellowish glow of the lamps behind us. Dirt road stretched backward for eternity. and for once we were alone. I take the heat of you on this tiny car every day, over the memory of you in my bed, in my hand, so heavy, a lifetime of want filling my palm. You bit my neck when you came, and then kept your eyes closed when you kissed me. And doing everything I can not to stare at him. I grab my things, and am out the door seconds after the bell rings. Autumn calls after me, but I keep going. I'll text her later and explain. I'm at the end of the hall when I hear my name. It's not Autumn. Tanner, wait up. My feet slow, even though I don't want them to. Hey. I keep my eyes glued to the span of lockers near me. I shouldn't do this right now. I'm hurt and mad and embarrassed by his avoidance and afraid of what I might say. Hey, he says back, obviously confused. And it's no wonder. I think this is the first time he's been the one to come after me. Standing in the middle of the hall, we're like a stone in the river, a steady stream of students moving to make their way around us. I wouldn't describe this spot as inconspicuous, but if he's here, I'm here. Are you headed to class? He asks. I don't know why the storm is choosing this second to build inside me. Why this moment? Why now? Everything was so good this weekend. We had one day of silence and one weird interaction in class, and boom, my brain is taking this to DEFCON 1 levels of panic. I'm back on the mountain, hearing him say, "Not that. I'm not gay." And there's something today, some set in his jaw, some weird lean in his posture away from me, that tells me Saturday did more harm than good. He's fighting something, and he doesn't even know it. He's so far buried in his own dogma and his own world of shoulds that he can't admit to himself that he's into dudes, that he'll always be into dudes, that it's a piece of him, a perfect part of him, and it deserves admiration and respect and space the same way anything else about him does. "It's the end of the day," I tell him. "I was going home." He shakes his head. "Right. I knew that. Tanner, I'm..." Sebastian never gets to finish that thought because Manny is coming toward us. "Hey, guys," he says, smiling in our direction. But he doesn't just say, "Hey." He says, "Hey, guys." Not like we're two people, but like we're two people together. Like we're a couple. When I look over to gauge Sebastian's reaction, I know he made the distinction too. "Jesus, Manny, would it be possible for you to be supportive more quietly?" "Manny, hi," Sebastian says. I blink away and nod toward Manny's Letterman jacket. "Game tonight?" I'm careful to keep my voice conversational, despite feeling like a constellation of small explosions have started inside my chest. I never told Sebastian about the conversation with Manny. I never told him that he knows. "Yeah, basketball. Listen, we're opening my pool this weekend, and I wanted to invite you both over. It'll be a few kids from here, some of my brother's friends." He pauses, eyes going from me to Sebastian, to me again, and if I had to guess what we looked like based on his expression, it's bad. He turns to me. "But Tanner, it's not like the guys from the lake. Everyone will be cool, so you don't have to worry or anything." Sebastian's head tilts slowly to the side before he asks, "What do you mean?" The air leaves my lungs in a rush. Manny's eyes go wide, and the only way this would be more awkward would be if Manny opened with, "You guys are the cutest couple." "I just mean..." He looks to me for help. "Sorry, I saw you guys on a hike the other week and thought..." All the blood drains from Sebastian's face. "Manny..." I start, but he waves me off. "No, guys, I get it. Whatever. You're both invited, or either of you separately, whatever works." He's such an easygoing guy, and I hope it comforts Sebastian that he clearly couldn't care one way or another what we do together, but Sebastian is like a statue beside me. With a quick glance over his shoulder, Manny is gone, and Sebastian turns on me. "Oh, shit. What did you tell him?" I hold up my hands. "Whoa, I didn't tell him anything. He just said he saw us on a hike." God, which hike? There are so many now, and over time we just got so comfortable being on the mountain, kissing like we were behind closed doors. The idea that Manny saw some of that maybe someone was with him, My stomach feels like a bubbling cauldron. Sebastian turns, and his profile is a portrait of tight anger. This is probably the first second I feel like we're actually a couple. How ironic, too, that it's happening while we're at school. The hall's thinning out, but for a few stragglers here and there who have no idea we're together, that we've kissed, that I've seen what he looks like when he's lost a pleasure, that I've watched him cry and held his hand, that I've seen his generosity and felt that pride I feel when I realized he's mine. None of those moments feel as real, as couple-y, as this one right here, where I know we're about to start arguing in earnest. What happened at the lake? Some guys were being dicks, and he came up to me and Autumn after and said, his voice rises several pitches, "Autumn knows too?" Someone passes, and Sebastian startles to attention, rearranging his features into the mask and giving her a mild, "Hi, Stella." When she's gone, I lead him out the door next to us, to the parking lot. It's dead out here, like there are no students in this lot, no teachers, barely anyone walking down the sidewalk. But even still, Sebastian keeps a healthy distance from me. A Mormon distance, my mind sneers. I mean, clearly Manny saw us. He came up to me and Autumn when we were leaving the lake because someone called someone else a faggot and told me he was sorry. It was awkward, like that, I say, gesturing back to the hallway. And Autumn grilled me for like 2 hours. "Tanner, this is so bad." Sebastian glares at me and then blinks away, exhaling slowly. I imagine a dragon and fire. "Look, Manny saw us, not just me, us. I'm not exactly waving a rainbow flag here. I don't tell people I'm bi. Autumn, my best friend, didn't even know until a week ago, and I didn't tell her about you. I told her I had feelings for you, not that they were reciprocated. I just thought, after Saturday night," he shakes his head, "I thought maybe you said something to Eric or Manny. Why would I do that?" I know I shouldn't say this next part. It's childish and petty, but my mouth doesn't get the memo. Unless, you know, I went in contact with someone about this important emotional event in my life. His head snaps up. "What does that mean?" "Just that it would have been nice to hear from you yesterday and get some acknowledgement from you today that you saw me and you weren't freaking out." Sebastian's expression screws up into irritation. "Tanner, I was busy yesterday." Oh, that just feels like a slap. Palm open, handprint to my cheek. "Tons of church to do, I guess." Sebastian picks this right up and runs with it. "It's what we do on Sunday. Have your mother educate you on how we operate, if she remembers." 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I keep counting. I remember that he's just scared. I remind myself that he's confused. If I take a step back from this second, I know I would want to tell myself, "This is not your battle. This is Sebastian's battle. Give him space." But isn't it mine too? Even a little bit? Aren't we in this as a team, navigating this first together? He's turned away from me, hand pulling at his hair as he paces the small corner of the parking lot. He looks like he's ready to run. It's funny to realize that's probably exactly what he wants to do, because it's not just that he doesn't want to have this discussion here. He doesn't want to do this anywhere. He wants to be together without any expectation or discussion. It's a cloud formation. Here for now, gone sometime in the nebulous future. Undefined. So I ask him, "Do you ever imagine telling your parents that you're gay?" He's not even surprised I've gotten here so quickly. I can tell. There's no startle, no double take. His scowl deepens, and he takes a step even farther away from me. I would need to figure out a lot of things about myself before I'd have that kind of conversation with them. I stare at him. "Sebastian? Are you gay?" "I mean, of course he is. Right?" He looks at me like he doesn't even know me. I don't know how to answer that. It's sort of a yes or no thing. I know who I want to be. "Who you want to be? What the fuck does that even mean?" "I want to be kind and generous and Christ-like." "But what does that have to do with my question? You're already that person. You're also good and thoughtful and loyal. All those qualities that make you the person I love. You are him already. Being gay doesn't change that. And I can see the moment that it hits, the moment that the word settles into his skin when it's absorbed. I said it. Not gay. I said love. He says my name under his breath and then looks to the side. He's not even looking at me, and I just told him that I love him. Somehow this next question feels so much more important than the one that came before it. Sebastian, did you hear what I said? I love you. Did that register at all? He nods. It registered. He's blushing. I notice the blush still, and I know it's a happy blush. I can see it. Now I know the different colors of emotions. How weird is that? He likes hearing that I love him, but he doesn't, too. It's too much for you, I say, isn't it? Yeah, he says. I mean, honestly, that's a lot to hear right now. And it isn't even about what you asked before. His voice drops then, and he looks around furtively. Whether I'm gay. It's a lot to say to me right now, because I have a book coming out, and I'm going on a mission, and there's so much going on. So it's inconvenient to hear me say I love you? He winces. Tanner, no, I just mean, I don't know how I can give you the same thing that you want to give me. It isn't a matter of wanting to give you my feelings. I actually laugh at this. It's just how I feel. He looks at me like I'm insane. Like maybe he doesn't believe me. I love you because of who you are, not because of your blush or your eyes or the things you make me feel when you touch me, I say, and he blushes again. The things that I love about you aren't going to go away when you go on your book tour, and they're not going to go away when you go on your mission. I'll still be here, and I'll still be thinking about all those things. I'll still be working on being a better person, a better friend, a better son. I'll still be wondering what it would be like to be a better boyfriend for you. And you will be on your mission, thinking about how much you wish you weren't gay. He's mad, I can tell. My first instinct is to wish I could take the words back, but it vanishes like smoke as reality hits me. I meant every single one of them. I won't wish, he starts, but then turns away, jaw ticking in anger. So this is it? I ask him. We've reached the limit of what you're willing to give? He shakes his head but says, you want me to be something I'm not. Something. Not someone. Something. I just want you to be okay with who you are now. I know I'm not the only one who has feelings here. He aims and shoots, his face a mask of calm. I think we should break up. Sebastian pauses, watching while my organs turn into bricks and crumble inside me. This isn't right anymore. The rest of the day is going to be hard to explain. I left right after those words fell from his mouth, and even now I don't really remember what I did. I went out to the lake, maybe, drove around and around and around. When it's dark and my phone is lit up with a million texts from Audie and none from Sebastian, I turn my car around, land softly at the curb near her house. I never noticed before that her room smells like vanilla candles and that her lamp casts a calming blue light. I never noticed before how she hugs in phases, like she'll take me into her arms and then squeeze, and then she'll squeeze harder, and in my head we're moving through different levels of comforting from, hey, what happened, to Tanner, talk to me, to, oh my God, what's wrong? And then we hit some other level, because she's coaxing me down. Her hands are on my face, I'm crying, I didn't know, and she's kissing away tears, and I'm babbling. I'm admitting that Sebastian and I were together. I'm telling her about what happened, how he ended it, how small I feel. Her mouth is near mine, on mine, opening in surprise and then something more. I fuck it up right here. This is where I ruin everything. Chapter 18. I don't know what I'm doing. I definitely shouldn't be here. My eyes are red and my hair is a mess. I'd still be in the clothes I slept in, except A, I showered the second I got home, and B, I didn't sleep anyway. I'm a mess. My eyes scan the hall on my way to her locker. She's usually easy to pick out of a crowd. Her hair is a spark of fire in a sea of navy and denim, and her voice can carry from one end of school to the other like nobody I've ever known. Nothing. I spin the dial on her locker, turning it right and left and then right again, only to see her coat and backpack aren't here either. Fuck. The bell rings, students siphon into classrooms, and the halls slowly drain to empty. Adrenaline mixes with dread as I stand alone in the hall, anticipating the gentle click of our principal's shoes on the linoleum. I should be in modern lit with Audie, who never actually transferred to Shakespeare. I walk to the class, peek inside just enough to see her chair is empty, and turn around. I'll take the truancy and whatever comes along with it because I am too restless and frantic to sit and discuss James Frey and his fake drama. But I don't want to go home. My dad is off this morning, and even though I'll have to talk to my parents eventually, I'm not ready to see that look, disappointment softened with pity, that tells me they knew this was going to happen, that it was just a matter of time before this all blew up in my face. I deserve every "I told you so" because they were right about everything. There's a bench at the top of the stairs, out of the line of sight of teachers and administrators trolling the halls for the dumb truants, like me, who aren't smart enough to leave school grounds. I grip my phone in my hand, praying for a few breaths that there'll be something there when I turn it on. But nope, there aren't any new notifications. Audie hasn't answered herself since last night. Feeling desperate, I open her contact info and press the number listed next to the word home. It rings twice before a voice fills the line. Hello? Hi, Mrs. Green. I sit up straighter, clear my throat. I used to speak to Autumn's mom nearly as much as my own, but I'm suddenly nervous. Has Autumn told her what's happened? Does she know what I did? Tanner, hi. Is Autumn there by chance? I swipe my free palm across the denim over my thigh. There's a blink of silence, and I realize that I don't know what I'll say even if she does come to the phone. That I love her, even if it's not the way she needs. That we made a mistake. I made a mistake, but I need her in my life anyway. Will any of that be enough? She is. Poor thing woke up with some kind of stomach bug and needed to stay home. Didn't she text you? An exit sign glows green at the top of the stairs, and I squeeze my eyes shut. I climbed out of Autumn's bed last night and left without a backward glance. When I finally got my head together, she wouldn't answer. I've texted and called and emailed. I swipe at my eyes with the back of my hand. I must have missed it. I'm sorry, Tan. I hope you weren't waiting outside for her this morning. I wasn't. Is she awake? Would it be possible to speak to her? My voice is pure, brittle desperation. There's a test in calc, and I was hoping she had the notes in her locker. She was asleep last time I checked. I can wake her if you need me to. I hesitate. No, that's okay. I'm just leaving for work, but I'll put a note on her door. She'll see it when she wakes up. I keep my voice even long enough to finish the call and tuck my phone back in my pocket. The bell rings, and the halls fill and empty again, but I don't move. I don't even know what time it is. I imagine I look like a statue, sitting on the bench, framed by the big window behind me. I'm bent at the waist, elbows on my knees, staring at the floor, and I start to force myself into complete stillness. My brain is chaos, but as I sit here, unmoving, things start to settle there, too. It's easy to acknowledge that I'm an asshole, that I acted impulsively, like I always do, and that I potentially broke another heart to distract myself from the tattered state of my own. I sit here and start to pretend I was carved out of something cold and unfeeling. I'm not sure if people don't notice me, or if they can just tell I should be left alone, but I see feet pass in front of me and no one speaks. Until someone does. Tanner. I look up, startled, to see Sebastian standing halfway up the stairs. He takes one tentative step up, and then another as students jog past him, hoping to make it into third period before the late bell. He looks like crap, too, for the first time ever. It strikes me that in the middle of this, I've barely thought of him at all. Do I tell him about Autumn? Despite what he said yesterday, he's here. Are we still together? What are you doing here? He makes his way toward me, hands pushed into the pockets of his hoodie, and stops when he reaches the top stair. I went by your house. I'm not there, I deadpan. I don't mean it to sound the way it comes out. The statue seems to be cracking more slowly than expected. Maybe I am this cold and unfeeling. Yeah, I figured that out when your dad answered. Sebastian hasn't seen my dad since the afternoon he walked in on us, and he must be thinking about that too, because a blush spreads high in his cheeks. You talked to my dad? For a minute. He was nice. Told me you were at school. He looks down at his feet. Not sure why I didn't put that together myself. Shouldn't you be in school? You'd think so. Cutting school. I try to smile, but it feels like a grimace. So perfect Sebastian isn't that perfect. I think we both know I'm not that perfect. I don't even know how to navigate this conversation. What are we talking about? Why did you come here? I didn't want to leave things the way they were yesterday. Just the mention of it makes my stomach drop. Breaking up, you mean? Autumn's face floats in my thoughts and the feel of what we did, and nausea rises in my throat. I genuinely worry I'm going to be sick and tilt my head up to the ceiling, sucking at the air. Yes, he says quietly. I'm sure it felt terrible to say what you said and have me respond that way. I blink back down to him, aware of the weight of tears on my lower lids. What I said? I want him to acknowledge the words. Yeah, it felt pretty terrible to tell you I love you and have you break up with me. There's that blush again, and I can almost see the elation he feels when he hears those three words. It's childish, but it's so unfair that he should get joy out of something that feels like a rope tied around my chest that tightens every time I say it. He swallows and a muscle ticks in his jaw. I'm sorry. He's sorry? I want to tell him what I did, because it was two betrayals, but I don't actually think I could get through the words without breaking. Right now we're speaking quietly enough that no one can hear, but if I broke down and started crying, it would be obvious to anyone watching the kind of conversation we're having. I'm not ready for that, and even after everything, I want to protect him, too. His face is arranged in a perfectly patient expression. I can see in this moment what a great missionary he'll be. He looks attentive and completely sincere, but somehow peacefully removed. I meet his eyes. Did you ever picture me in your life after this semester? He looks confused for a beat. I know it's because what came next was always an abstract thought. He had plans, of course, book tour, mission, returning home, and finishing school, probably meeting some sweet girl and following God's plan. But I never figured into any of it. Maybe early in the morning, or in some secret dark corner of his mind, but not in any real way that mattered. I don't think I pictured much of anything, he says carefully. I don't know how the book tour will be. I've never done it. I don't know what leaving on a mission will be. I've never done it. I've never done this either. He gestures between us with his index finger, and it feels somehow accusatory, like it's something I hoisted onto him. You know what I don't get? I say, running a hand down my face. If you never had any intention of anyone knowing or of it meaning anything, why did you dangle me in front of your family and your church? Did you want to get caught? Something flashes across his face, and the calm, disconnected mask is gone. Has the thought never occurred to him? His mouth opens and closes again. He starts to say, but there's no more room for easy answers or sound bites from a church manual. I know you said you prayed and prayed, and that God told you that being with me wasn't wrong. At this, Sebastian breaks eye contact, a look behind him, making sure we're still alone. I bite down my frustration. He followed me here for crying out loud, and push on. But when you did that, did you actually take the time to think about how this fit into your future and who you are and what it means to be gay? I'm not. I know, I growl. I get it. You're not gay. But did you ever look inside yourself while you prayed and try to find the seed of who you are in there instead of just asking God over and over for permission to look? He doesn't say anything else, and my shoulders sag. I just want to go. Without any idea why he came to find me, I can't fix this for either of us. Sebastian is going to go, and I have to let him. I stand for the first time in what feels like hours. I get lightheaded as blood flows to my legs, but it feels good to be moving, to have a goal again. Autumn. I move to pass him and stop, leaning in to whisper and getting caught in the familiar smell of him. I don't actually care if you break my heart, Sebastian. I went into this knowing it could happen and gave it to you anyway. But I don't want you to break your own. You have so much space in your heart for your church. Does it have space for you? I hear the music as soon as I get out of my car. The windows of Autumn's small two-story house are closed, but the pounding bass of her screaming death metal rattles them in their frames. She's moved from sad and hiding under her covers to death metal. All in all, this is a good sign. I'm usually the one who cuts the grass in the summer, and right now it's in need of a good mowing. Unruly tufts of green creep along the edge of the sidewalk. I make a mental note to bring the mower over later this week, if Autumn lets me. We might not even be speaking. With a steadying breath, I ring the bell, knowing she'll probably never hear it over the music. There's no movement in the house. I pull out my phone and dial her number again. My head snaps up when, for the first time since last night, it actually rings, instead of going straight to voicemail. She doesn't answer, though, and it goes to voicemail anyway. I leave yet another message. Autumn, it's me. Please call me back. Stuffing my phone in my pocket, I try the bell again before sitting down on her front steps for the long haul. I know she's in there. I'll just have to wait. I'm up to 12 cars, 2 dog walkers, and 1 mailman passing by before I finally hear something. The music cuts off so quickly that the sudden silence leaves my ears ringing. I twist around in time to see a red-eyed Autumn peeking her head around the door. In my rush to stand, I almost pitch myself off the porch, and the corner of her mouth twitches up into a smile. My chest grows carbonated with hope. "I saw you pull up," she says, and squinting into the bright afternoon, steps out onto the porch. It means she's known I've been here for nearly an hour. Figured I'd better come out before the neighbors call to report a squatter. I tried to call. "I saw." With a sigh, she looks out into the yard before squinting up at me again. "Maybe you should come in." I nod eagerly. She pulls the door open wider and steps back into the darkness, waving me in with a pale hand. Her living room is a literal blanket fort, the way it always is when she needs to hide out from the world. The curtains are pulled shut and the TV is on but muted. Pillows and blankets engulf the couch, and in the corner is a package of Chips Ahoy that looks like it's been torn open by a band of ferrets. Her phone is sitting placidly on the coffee table. The screen is lit with notifications. I bet they're all from me. I've been in this house 1,000 times, had dinner here, done homework, watched countless movies on this very couch. But I've never stood here like this, with a mountain of awkward between Autumn and me. I don't know how to scale it. I watch as she moves to the couch, kicking the majority of blankets to the floor before waving me over. We hardly ever talk out here. We'll watch movies quietly on the couch, eat food in the kitchen, but always, for as long as we've been best friends, our conversations happen in her bedroom. I'm not sure either of us is ready to go back in there yet. My stomach is in knots. What was the point of sitting at school calming my thoughts all morning if, now that I'm here, I can't think of a single thing to say? I look at her and try to focus. When I came over last night, she had on a pair of pink and black pajamas. A flash of color pops in my head, chased by the question, did she get dressed, or did she climb immediately into the shower? Did she try to wash away what happened as quickly as I did? She's wearing a pair of sweats now, and a U of U shirt we got at a game last summer. They were playing BYU, and we wanted U of U to beat them so badly, we were scouring the ground for lucky pennies and making wishes in fountains. It feels 100 years away from where we are now. Her hair is pulled to the side and twisted into a single braid. It looks wet. Why am I relieved that she showered? My thoughts trip down another tangent. I remember how Sebastian's hair felt against my face as he kissed down my jaw to my chest, but I have no recollection of whether Autumn's hair was up or down last night, whether I felt it at all. This seems to pull my guilt right up to the surface, and words tumble out. When I came over, I never meant... I swipe at a tear and try to start over. I didn't mean for that to happen. I was hurt and not thinking straight, and I never meant to take advantage of you, and... Autumn holds up her hand to stop me. Wait. Before you go all noble on me, I get to talk. I nod. I'm breathing so hard, like I just ran 10 miles to get here. Okay? When I woke up this morning, I thought it had been a dream. She says this with her eyes fixed on her lap, her fingers toying with the ribbon tie at her waistband. I thought I'd dreamed you came over and we did that. She laughs and looks up at me. I've dreamed about it before. I don't know what to say. It's not that I'm surprised exactly, but Autumn's attraction to me was always some abstract concept, nothing solid, no foundation to make it last. Oh. Which is probably not a great response. She reaches up and twists the end of her braid around her finger until the skin turns white. I know you're going to tell me that you took advantage of me, and I guess, in a way, you did. But it wasn't only you. I wasn't lying when I said this whole thing with Sebastian was hard on me, Tan. For a few reasons. I think a part of you has always known some of it. Has known why. Autumn looks to me for confirmation, and I get this sick, slithering feeling in my chest. I think that's why it feels so terrible, I said. That's the definition of taking advantage. Yeah, okay, she shakes her head. But it's not really that simple. Our relationship has changed so much these past few months, and I think I was still trying to figure it out. Figure you out. What do you mean? When you told me you were bi, and God, this makes me such a terrible person, but since there are literally no more secrets between us, I need to get it out. Okay? I nod. And she pulls her legs to her chest, rests her chin on her knees. I'm not sure I believed you at first. I had a moment where I thought, great, now I have to worry about girls and boys. Then I also thought maybe I could be the one to change your mind. Oh, I say again, not knowing how else to respond. She's obviously not the first one to think bisexuality is about choice and not about the way you're made, so I have a hard time faulting her for that. Especially now. You were so upset and just... I know you. I know how you react when you're hurt. You dive into me, into your best friend's safe space, and last night... She bites a lip, chewing it as she thinks. I pulled you over me. Maybe I took advantage too. Audie, no. When you said that Sebastian didn't love you, it's like some fuse burned down in my chest. Tears fill her eyes, and she shakes her head, trying to blink them away. I was so mad at him. And then the worst part, how could you let him hurt you? It was so obvious. I don't know why. I honestly don't, but this makes me laugh. My first genuine laugh in what feels like days. She reaches for me, pulling my head onto her shoulder. Come here, idiot. I lean against her. And with the smell of her shampoo and the feel of her arm around my neck, a film strip of images blurs past me, and a quiet sob escapes. Autumn, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, too, she whispers. I made you cheat. We broke up, though. There has to be a mourning period. I want to love you like that, I admit. She lets the words hang there, and I keep expecting it to thicken, to grow weird. But it doesn't. This will be in our rearview mirror soon. She kisses my temple. It's something her mother has said to her probably 1,000 times. Right now, Audie sounds like a girl trying on wisdom, and it makes me squeeze her tighter. Are you okay? I feel her shrug. Sore? Sore, I repeat slowly, trying to follow. And then she laughs, self-consciously, and the brakes lay down a long scar of black in my mind. How? How did I forget? How did it not even pop into my head for one goddamn second? A sensation like my chest crumpling causes me to fall forward. Audie, holy shit. She pushes back, trying to trap my face with her hands. Tan, oh my God. I duck down, putting my head between my knees so I don't pass out. You were a virgin. I knew you were. I knew, but... No, no, it's fine. I make some ghoulish moan, wanting, basically, to die on this couch. But Audie smacks my arm, jerking me upright. Knock it off. I am Satan. Stop it. She looks pissed for the first time. We were sober. You were upset. I was at home doing homework, reading. I wasn't out of my mind. I wasn't intoxicated. I knew what was happening. I wanted it. I closed my eyes. Come back, Statue Tanner. Listen to what she's saying and nothing else. Okay, she says, shaking me. Give me some credit and give yourself some while you're at it. You were so sweet to me, and we were safe. That's what matters. I shake my head. I remember tiny flashes. Most of it is this weird emotional blur. I wanted it to be with you, she says. You're my best friend, and in some twisted way it made sense that it would be you, even if you were doing it to get out of your own head for a half hour. I actually snort at this. It was definitely not a half hour, and she smacks me again, but I can see she's smiling. I'm the one you make that kind of mistake with. That person is me. Really? Really, she says. Her eyes turn into these shining beacons of vulnerability, and I want to punch my own face. Please don't say you regret it. That would feel terrible. I mean, I begin, wanting to be honest. I don't know what to say to that. Do I sort of like that I was your first? Yeah, she grins. But that's shitty, Audie. It should be with... She raises an eyebrow, waiting skeptically. Yeah, not Eric, I admit. I don't know. Someone who loves you like that, who takes their time and stuff. Who takes their time and stuff, she repeats. Honestly, you're so smooth. I have no idea why Sebastian broke up with you. I bark out a laugh that seems to die out into silence almost immediately. So we're okay? I ask after a minute or so of quiet. I am. Audie runs her fingers through my hair. Have you talked to him? I groan again. It's like a revolving door of suck. I pass through the lobby of terrible best friend behavior and into the room of heartache and religious bigotry. He came by today to apologize. So you're back together? I love her for the seed of hope in her voice. No. She makes a small sound of sympathy that reminds me how easily everything happened yesterday. I think we both realize it at the same time. Autumn pulls her arm away, tucking her hands between her knees. I shift so that I'm sitting up. I think he just wanted to own the way that he was sort of shitty about it. As much as I want to hate him, I don't think he set out to hurt me. I don't think he set out for a lot of this to happen, she says. I lift my chin to see her. What do you mean? I think he was intrigued at first. Sometimes you actually can be as charming as you think you are. I think he saw you as a way to rule something out, and then the opposite happened. God, that's depressing. Is it terrible that I sort of feel sorry for him? She asks. I mean, I know it hurts and feels like it will never be okay again, but it will. Someday. You'll wake up and it will hurt a little less and a little less until some boy or girl is smiling at you and it makes you feel stupid all over again. It does sound impossible. My whole book is about him, I tell her. He was going to help me edit it, to cut out himself in it and make it someone else. I never sent it to him. That's out the window now, and I honestly don't know what I'm going to do. Chapter 19. I quickly learn that just because things feel fine after a conversation like the one Audie and I have, it doesn't mean things are normal. Whatever the hell normal is anymore. Autumn is back at school on Wednesday, but there's a shorthand between us that seems to have been elongated. We climb out of my car, and she makes a joke when she points out that my zipper is down. We both turn into awkward robots as I reach for it, zipping it up. I throw my arm around her as we walk down the hall, and she stiffens before leaning into me, and it's so forced I want to laugh. One look at her face, anxious, hopeful, eager to make everything okay. And I try to pull her into a bear hug, but we are crashed into by a couple of students running down the hall. It's going to take some time to find our way back into an easy physical space. I wonder if it's because, after the chaos of mutual apologies, the reality has settled in that we had sex. These are the kinds of things we would normally dissect together. If it were anyone else, I could complain to Audie how it changed everything, but you see the obvious issue there. I can't talk to Mom or Dad about it either, because no matter how much they love me, knowing I did something like that would change the way they see me. I know it would. All they know is that Sebastian broke up with me, and I'm a basket case. Mom's bumper sticker drive is out in full force. In the past 3 days, I've received deliveries in my pillowcase from, ostensibly, Morgan Freeman, Ellen DeGeneres, and Tennessee Williams. For as much as I tease her about it, I can't deny it helps. I let out a long breath when I walk into the house. I'll never shy away from her hugs. We don't always need to speak out loud for them to know what I'm feeling. The clock ticking down to graduation is both welcome and dreaded. I can't wait to get out of here, but graduation signals the time when I'll need to get this book in, and my only strategy right now is to offer Fujita the first 20 pages, tell him that the rest is too personal to share, and hope he understands. Also contributing to the dreaded column, Audie and I were stupid and didn't apply to any of the same schools. So while I've been accepted to UCLA, University of Washington, Tufts, and Tulane, Autumn has been accepted at the U of U, Yale, Rice, Northwestern, and the University of Oregon. She's going to Yale. I'm going to UCLA. I say it over and over again. Autumn is going to Yale. I'm going to UCLA. We almost couldn't be moving farther apart. It's a few months away, and I'm already dreading the pain of this goodbye. It carves out a hollow pit inside me, like I'm losing more than just a geographical anchor. I'm losing an era. Is that lame? Probably. Everyone seems to be getting deep about finishing high school, and then our parents listen to us and laugh like we're still so young and don't know anything, which is probably true, though I do know some things. I know that my feelings for Sebastian don't seem to dim over the next 2 weeks. I know that the book I'm writing feels like an enemy, a chore. It has no heart and no end. I realize now what I thought was easy, writing a book, really was easy. Reasonably speaking, anyone can start one. It's finishing that's impossible. Autumn suggests changing the names and places, but I assure her that didn't work out so well before. Tenenner can attest to that. She's quick to offer suggestions. I can rewrite it. She can, or we can work together. She thinks there are a million ways I can make it work without outing Sebastian. I'm not so sure. Looking back, this book is so basic it's almost embarrassing. It's just one guy's story, the lamest autobiography ever of falling in love. Love fails for a million reasons. Distance, infidelity, pride, religion, money, illness. Why is this story any more worthy? It felt like it was. It felt important. Living in this town is suffocating in so many ways. But if a tree falls in the woods, maybe it makes no sound. And if a boy falls for the bishop's closeted son, maybe it makes no story. Sebastian's been in class only once in the past 2 weeks. Fujita informs us he's taking a break to finish up his own school year and will be back in time to see us turn in our papers. The last day Sebastian was in class, he sat in the front, ducked low over a table with Sabine and Levi going over their final chapters. His hair fell over his eyes, and he would flip it out unconsciously. His shirt stretched across his back, and I remembered seeing him shirtless, seeing the treasure map of muscle and bone. Being in the same room with him after the breakup was actually painful. I mean, I wonder about that, how I can be sitting there and no one is touching me and still I hurt. My chest, my limbs, my throat, everything aches. The whole time, Autumn sat beside me, her spine curled with guilt, and tried to listen to what Fujita was telling us about copy edits. Every time she looked at Sebastian, she'd glance at me, and I could see the question in her eyes, "Did you tell him?" But she knows the answer. I'd have to talk to him to tell him anything. We haven't texted or emailed or even passed notes and folders. I won't lie. It's killing me slowly. I saw a movie when I was a kid, something that was probably way too mature for me at that age, but there's this one scene that stuck with me so intensely that sometimes it rushes into my thoughts and actually makes me shiver with dread. In it, a woman is walking across the street with her child, and the child runs ahead and gets hit by a car. I don't even know the plot that comes after this, but the mother starts screaming, tries to walk backward to undo what just happened. She's so frantic, so tortured, that for a minute her mind splits, and she thinks there's a way she can take it all back. I'm not comparing my breakup to the death of a child. I'm not that melodramatic. But the feeling of helplessness, of being totally unable to change your fate, is so dizzying. Sometimes it makes me nauseous out of the blue. There's nothing I can do to fix this. There's nothing I can do to get him back. I've told my parents that we crashed and burned, and as much as they try to cheer me up, and as much as Audie and I work on finding a way back to the easy comfort we had before, That rain cloud follows me everywhere. I'm not hungry. I sleep a ton. I don't care about this stupid book. 3 weeks after we broke up, and 8 days before my novel is due, Sebastian is sitting on my front steps when I get home. I'm not proud to admit it, but I immediately start crying. It's not like I break down and crumple onto the sidewalk, but the back of my throat gets tight, and the sting spreads across the surface of my eyes. Maybe I'm crying because I'm terrified that he's come here to do more damage, to reactivate what I feel, only to let me down easy again, missionary style. He stands, wiping his palms on his track pants. He must have come right after practice. "I skipped soccer," he says by way of greeting. He's so nervous, his voice is shaking. Mine shakes too. "Seriously?" "Yeah." He smiles, and it's the kind of smile that starts on one side, unsure, more like a question. Are we smiling? Is this cool? It hits me like a slap across my cheek that I'm his safe space. I get his real smiles. He's never had an Autumn, or a Paul and Jenna Scott, a Manny, or even a Haley who hates him but accepts him. I give up the battle and smile back. Sebastian has become quite the truant. God, it feels so good to see him. I missed him so much. It's like there's an animal inside me, a beastly puppeteer trying to direct my arms around his shoulders and my face into his neck. The question hangs like a cloud over my head. "What are you doing here?" He lets out a tight cough and looks down the street. His eyes are puffy and red, and I think this time he has been crying. "I'm not doing so great. I didn't know where else to go." He laughs now, squeezing his eyes closed. "That sounds so lame." "He came to me." "It doesn't." Reeling, I move closer to him, close enough to touch if I wanted, to check him everywhere and make sure he's okay. "What happened?" Sebastian stares down at our feet. He's got on indoor cleats, and I love them on him. They're black Adidas with orange stripes. I'm wearing some scuffed-up Vans. While he figures out his answer, I imagine our feet moving at a dance, or our shoes side by side at the front door. My brain is such a traitorous beast. It immediately goes from, "Ouch, Sebastian is sitting right there," to "happily married dudes." "I talked to my parents," he says, and the world comes to a screeching stop. "What?" "I didn't come out," he says quietly, and it's such a revelation to even hear him say this much that my knees want to buckle. "But I gave a hypothetical." Gesturing that we walk around to the backyard for more privacy, I turn, and he follows. I wish I could describe what happens inside my chest when I feel his hand slide into mine as we move past the trellis of ivy along the garage. There's a party in my blood, riotous and electric. It vibrates my bones. "This okay?" he asks. I look down at our hands, so similar in size. "I don't know, actually." Autumn's voice pushes into my head. "Be careful." I shift her voice to the front, but I don't let go of his hand. We find a spot under Mom's favorite willow tree and sit. The grass is still wet from the sprinklers, but I don't think either of us cares. I stretch out my legs and he follows, pressing the length of his thigh to mine. "What should we do first?" he asks, staring at our legs. "My apology or my story?"
"His apology?"
"I don't know if my brain has caught up yet."
"Are you okay? Have you been okay?"
I let out a single dry laugh.
"About us? No, not at all."
"Me either." I count out my heartbeats. 1, 2, 3, 4. A bird shrieks overhead and the wind moves through the trees. This tree always reminded me of Mr. Snuffleupagus on Sesame Street, lumbering and unobtrusive and gentle. "I didn't end things because I was over you," he says.
"I know. It made it worse, I think."
He turns, cupping my neck in both palms, so I look him in the eye.
"I'm sorry."
His hands are so warm and they're shaking. I bite my lip so I don't lose it. Sebastian moves closer, ponderously, never closing his eyes, even when his mouth touches mine. I don't even think I kiss him back. I just sort of sit there, mouth hanging open in shock. "I love you, too." He kisses me again, this time longer.
This time, I kiss him back. I pull away because maybe I need to lose it a little, bending in